And a very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters Outer Spaces right here on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be back with you on this Thursday, January 24th. With me, of course, for this episode of the program, once again, it's Doug Hackbarth from Broadview Florist. Doug, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. Always glad to be here.
And of course, this is the program that's driven by you. We want your plant and garden questions and comments today. Maybe you have a special tip that you'd like to share with our listeners as well, or just a good story about your outer spaces to tell. We'll hear it all today. We hope you'll get in touch. It's 260-452-1185. Or you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters at nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Currently, nobody in our phone bank, so if you do give us a call soon, you'll get right through. Doug, how have your outer spaces been this last week?
Well, you know, it's been cold. it's been awfully cold.
That seems like an understatement. even this morning, a wind chill felt like 2 or 3 degrees below zero. Holy cow.
It's just crazy.
It feels like that classic Indiana winter, I remember.
Yeah. I'm going to do a quick trip to Chicago here toward the first of the week, and luckily the weather's going back up into the upper 30s and 40s.
Balmy.
My wife says, "What coat are you going to take?" I said, "Are you kidding? I'm taking shorts. That's warm weather. I'm eating my lunch outside."
That's right. Well, hopefully it'll get up that high, and you can send us vacation photos. We'll put them on the Facebook page.
Yeah, there you go. But it's always fun to go to Chicago. I always enjoy it, and I'm always happy. I've been there when it snows, but Chicago is hugely big about keeping the streets and sidewalks clear.
Sure.
I mean, I've been there in snowstorms, and they keep them clean. Very clean. So it's a fun town, and it won't let you down. And oh, wait, that's New York.
That's right. Well, if you want to stop Doug from singing this hour,
yes,
the number to get in touch with your plant or garden question, 260-452-1185. Doug, I know last week we talked a bit about, I believe it was indoor plants and how you can green up your inner spaces,
as it were.
You brought a new topic this week. We were talking before the show started, actually, about the effect of certain salts on plants.
Well, with all the snow and the ice that's forming these days, people are bound to be using salt on their sidewalks, on their driveways. And the question always is, well, will it hurt the grass along the edge? Maybe in some areas, will it hurt the ground covers? Like if you're going up your fancy sidewalk, you may have ivies and ground covers planted there. And will it affect them? Well, it won't do anything to them through the winter months, but you're going to see some effects in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And the effects that result from using too much salt in those areas is the same types of effects that you might experience if your plants were under a high drought situation. The leaves will turn yellow. Things look like they're shriveled up and wilty, as if they're dry. Even though you may even have rain, it's still going to look like that. And it's because it constricts the amount of liquid that can go through the root system. And it causes these bad effects. So basically, you just need to be very careful and very sparingly how you use it around any plants. Of course, in the middle of the driveway, go to it. But you don't want weeds growing there anyway. And so, especially if it's a stone driveway, most people do have asphalt and concrete these days. But the best thing, and of course, here we're talking, what do you do in the spring if you see these results? Well, leaching. Leaching with water will eventually help. It's about the only thing you can do.
Well, and that's gonna take a while.
Yeah, and you're actually not going to water your plants while you're leaching, because they're not going to soak it up until this salt gets washed away. So, it's going to take some leaching. If you have a wet spring like springs are supposed to be, that'll help do the job for you.
Looks like we have a caller on the line. We'll get back to this in a little while. And, of course, we want to hear your plant and garden questions, comments, tips, or perhaps just to tell us a story about what's going on in your backyard these days, especially now that this we've been gripped in this cold weather. We're finally just starting to break out of. The number is 260-452-1185. Toll free at 1-800-471-9264. Of course, you can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet. That's at Midday Matters. Let's open the phones and go to Mary. Mary, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hi, thank you.
Yes, how are you, Mary?
I'm good. This is the third year that I've had an amaryllis. Every spring I put it out and then bring it in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And this year when I brought it in, it was huge and had two bulbs, so I separated them. Now I have in one pot I have all the leaves, and in the other pot I have an amaryllis, which did bloom. I'm wondering if it's worth saving, because since I must have done something terribly wrong.
It is worth saving.
Is it?
Yeah, either one of them is. They're both worth saving. The amaryllis bulbs can last you a lifetime, and they're relatively simple to keep as long as you make sure they get to go through their rest period every year. Otherwise, they get exhausted.
Right.
And they don't perform properly. But the one that bloomed, it has no foliage?
No foliage.
But the bloom is finished.
Yeah.
So did you cut the flower stalk off?
Not yet.
Well, you can cut that flower stalk off anytime, and you'll either force up another flower stalk, or you may start forcing up some foliage, but we do need to get some foliage growing, and you want to grow that all through the summer.
Right.
Now, I've always said with amaryllis, you can plant them in October, November, and they'll almost always bloom without fail. However, you can never guess if they're going to shoot a bloom up first or if they're going to shoot leaves up first, because they do act different. And I don't really think it's different varieties that make that happen. I see the same variety perform differently. So the other one that did not bloom, it has foliage on it, though. Lots of foliage?
Yeah.
Okay. And did
normal amount.
And did you give these a rest period after summer was over?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what did you do?
Well, I put them out and let them, I don't water them or anything. I pretty much let them die, because they don't seem to die in my house in the spring. And let them die, and then I separated the bulbs. That's what I thought was a mistake. And then I bring them in and plant them again, and they just come up every year. They're really beautiful, but...
Well, it is not a mistake to separate those bulbs, because what you'll have is you'll have a regular-sized bulb and a baby bulb. The baby bulb may not bloom the first year or two. But you still have to run it through its cycles of growing the foliage. Now, by rights, what you want to do is the first part of September. You want to grow this thing all through the summer. But the first part of it, because I heard you say you let it die down in the spring. You should grow it all spring, all summer, and then the first part of September, get out the pruners, the scissors. They're pretty easy to cut. And cut all the foliage off. Even if it looks healthy and good and green, cut it all off the 1st of September, and then just put these pots away. Put them in the garage. Put them in the basement, in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put your poinsettia in a closet ever, but put your amaryllis in a closet. And it should stay in there for minimum 6 weeks. 8 weeks would be better. 10 weeks would be okay. And after that time period, and no water or anything at that time, after that time period, you bring it back out, put it in a sunny spot, and give it a good drink of water one time only, and don't water it again until you start to see active growth. And in the case of amaryllis, one bulb might take right off and the other one might take 3 weeks before it takes right off. But don't water them a second time, no matter how dry they get, until they start to grow again. And this is how you get the blooms to pop out. You have to put it through this rough treatment to get the blooms to pop out.
Well, I always heard that you should let them die back, and they would never die back, so that's why I quit quit watering them so they would die.
Well, you sort of let them die back, only you help them out by cutting the foliage off in September. I mean, otherwise that foliage is just going to turn brown, you know, first yellow, then brown. You know, just cut it off and that takes care of that problem. And then no water, and it puts it through its dormant rest period, which is what it needs. I want to tell you, I bought, I got this brainy idea because the bulbs, the amaryllis bulbs that I get from the Dutch people, the you know, from overseas, they're huge bulbs, monstrous bulbs with a huge price. Hmm. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to do like regular folks. I'm just going to go to the dime store, box store, whatever, and buy about 20 of them that come with the pot and the kit, the soil, the bulb, the whole works. And I'm just going to plant those in my greenhouse and grow them. Well, guess what? Those bulbs are not the same top quality bulbs that I get out of Holland.
Hmm.
And I would say if I planted 10 of them, 6 of them bloomed.
Wow. Because I only have one, but I've had really good luck. Yeah. Like it'll have 5 blooms on it.
And the other 14 didn't bloom. And I did this, and I thought, well, this isn't working out too well. So I have to nurture these things for a couple of years to get them to bloom, which they all did eventually, and I actually sold them all. But it took me 2 to 3 years because this wasn't the top quality expensive bulb. And so then I went back to buying the good bulbs. And like this year, for example, I bought 50 bulbs, and every one of them has bloomed. Every one of them.
Holy
50
wow.
out of 50.
Huh.
So I can't knock, you know, paying a little more for the top quality bulb. It's just a story I'm relating to you because it happens to be true.
Oh. Well,
they're beautiful flowers, and
thank you.
They bloom right at Christmas, along
thank
with
you.
My cactus and my poinsettia.
Yes, so. Yes. Thank you.
Mary, we appreciate the call, and good luck.
Thank you.
All thank
right.
you.
Bye.
Have a great day. The number here, 260-452-1185, or 800-471-9264. That's our toll-free line. Of course, you can always email us, middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall, that's facebook.com/middaymatters, or send us a tweet as well, and we'll try to get you on the air here. We have another call on the line before we have to go to our break. It's Bruce. Bruce, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi,
Doug. Hi, how are you?
Hey, I called in about a month ago, and I said, hey, my heirloom tomatoes, I brought one inside, and it's still continuing to bloom.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's not producing fruit, but
it's blooming.
Still,
yeah.
It's three feet tall now.
Oh,
holy cow.
What's your plans with this, Bruce? What are you going to do with it?
I don't know. It just has a very nice aromatic smell to it, and I just like it.
You know, I like the smell of tomato plants, too. There is nothing quite like that. That's true. Why don't we bottle this up and make a manly perfume on it? Instead of musk, it's tomato.
I was just going to say, or bottle the lightning that you have there, Bruce. It sounds like whatever you're doing with that plant, it's working.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know. Anyhow, I bought a spider plant a long time ago. It's still in the plastic pot. How do I take care of this plant?
Well, spider plants are very easy to grow. And has yours produced a bunch of babies or not?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, we have spider plants in the greenhouse, and we have maybe six baskets that are really old. They're on their second year. And the plant itself looks yellowed and rough, but it has a gazillion. I mean, I count it as a gazillion.
Oh, that's the official count?
Yeah, a gazillion babies on it. And so I keep it around because I'm going to harvest all the babies, and I'm going to stick them all in, first off, 4-inch pots to get them going that way. Now, you don't have to go to that step. The problem with me is I have so many of them.
Hmm.
If I went directly to hanging baskets, I'd have to put up another greenhouse because they would take up so much space. But you can take your babies, and you can simply cut them off the plant, stick them in a pot of soil, and water them, and they will grow without fail.
Okay.
Generally,
do I need to transplant the get rid of the plastic pot and put them in a a different hanging basket.
We always use plastic pots in just about everything we grow. I remember when plastic was invented, so I always relate it to the movie The Graduate, when that guy went up to the graduate and he says, "I got one word for you, Benjamin, and it's plastics." And I thought, yeah, what's he talking about? That hard stuff that's brittle and breaks easy, but you know, they've improved it since then. And so
Bruce doesn't have to transplant out of the
no,
plastic.
No, he can stay with plastic, but I would harvest the babies and eventually throw the mother plant away.
Yeah.
Because the mother plant will just get old and not look good. It'll get worse and worse with time, and it's always best to just reharvest the babies and start new ones all the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you don't have to throw the old one away until the new ones start growing and you say, hey, this is working.
What's an actual, an approximate life span for those plants?
Oh, really, 2 years in a hanging basket's enough.
Oh, okay.
They just get old and rough and hardened. And it's just tough to make them look good again. And they don't benefit from a lot of fertilizer. Fertilizer is one thing we don't use on spider plants if we want babies, because you have to treat them rough, starve them, dry, make them go dry in order to produce babies. But not to the point of where all the foliage is damaged. You don't want that either, brown tips and things like that. But if you keep them too wet, you'll get brown leaves that are soggy brown. There's a difference between soggy brown and crispy brown. Brown is too much water, and crispy brown is allowing them to get too dry between waterings.
Okay. So, well, thank you very much.
Harvest the babies, you bet.
And Bruce, what we'll look forward to your gardening book, because whatever you're doing, holy cow, it's all growing. So.
Good. Yeah, tomatoes. I love it.
Congratulations.
Do you know what variety that heirloom tomato is?
I don't. I'll see if I still got the tags on them. But,
just curious, because there are so many kinds.
Feel free to let us know.
Thank you.
I will. I'll keep you posted.
All right.
All right, Bruce. Thanks.
Have a great day, Bruce. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Those are the numbers to call if you have a question, a comment, maybe a story or a tip to share with us this afternoon, and we certainly hope you do. Doug, before we go to the break here, is that unusual, Bruce's situation, for his heirlooms to be growing like crazy?
Well, you know, tomato plants will grow. It's the whole thing is the performance, the fruit, and you just can't get it in the wintertime. I thought maybe once years ago I could make it happen in the greenhouse, you know, under the right conditions. But there is no such thing as right conditions in the winter for a tomato, because the day length is too short.
Sure.
I can't make the day length longer. Sure, I can turn lights on, but it's not enough for a tomato plant. It has an effect on mums. It has an effect on calanchos. African violets benefit from artificial light. But a tomato plant, there isn't enough artificial light in the world to make it work.
All right. Well, once again, well done, Bruce. Whatever you're doing, it sure is working. And we do need to take a quick break here, but the number's one more time for you to join us this hour, 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters Outer Spaces.
It's time to meet music.
Hi, I'm Julia Meek, and what does this week's Meet the Music have in store? Ellen Coplin at the Studio Baldwin, Brad Dewar gone solo acoustic, and an audio attitude from Juke Joint Jive. That's Thursday night from 7 to 9 here at 89.1 FM, or listen online at NIPR.FM, a two-hour serving of homegrown delights here on Meet the Music. I got my guitar and I've
got my band. Dror Moreh interviewed six former heads of the Israeli secret service, the Shin Bet, about the price of their life's work.
If there are people who understand the Israeli-Palestinian conflict on all its aspects, it's those people who spoke in the film.
The new Oscar-nominated film, The Gatekeepers, today on All Things Considered from NPR News. All Things Considered airs weekday afternoons at 4 on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by United Way of Allen County, offering opportunities to volunteer and make an impact on a child's life by mentoring or tutoring. UWEducationNetwork.org. Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Reinbold and Anderson, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Jobs may change, retirement dreams don't have to. More information on Reinbold and Anderson on NIPR's homepage at nipr.fm.
Good afternoon, 12:28. It's Midday Matters here on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Doug Hackbarth, and because it's Thursday, it's the Outer Spaces edition of our program. This is the show, of course, when we ask you to call in with your tips, with your questions and comments, or with a good story about what's going on in your outer spaces these days, and we'd love to hear it. No callers currently in the phone bank, so if you give us a call right now, you'll get right through. 260-452-1185 is the local line if you'd like to get in touch this hour, or you can call us toll-free on 800-471-9264. Of course, we also have our email address, or our email box wide open here. It's middaymatters at nipr.fm. Facebook page is up as well, and you can always tweet us at Midday Matters. Now, Doug, I know that we just heard from Bruce, whose heirloom tomato is still growing like crazy, 3 feet tall, he said, roughly.
Unbelievable.
Tomatoes, one of your favorite topics, and even though it's winter, we can still talk about them.
Well, that's right. And, the last couple of weeks, I've brought this catalog in, which I think for a tomato lover is the greatest catalog you can get. It's called Totally Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. They do have other things in it like peppers and stuff, but it's basically a tomato catalog, every variety of tomato you have never heard of. I'm telling you, there are varieties in here, boxcar, welly, Mexico midget. Who's heard of some of these things? They're just unbelievable.
That's not me.
rambling stars and stripes. Tom Thumb, I think people have heard of. Red Robin makes a great little miniature plant. Some of these things, you see, there's a difference between cherry tomatoes. You can have a cherry tomato that grows as tall as any tomato plant, which would be like Sweet 100.
Sure.
It grows 4, 5, 6 feet tall and produces, they say Sweet 100, they should call it Sweet 1000. It produces that many tomatoes. but then there's cherry tomatoes that stay incredibly short, such as Tiny Tim and Tom Thumb, and there's Red Robin, as I said. They stay relatively short, and they can be used in a containerized garden a lot better. You still get cherry tomatoes. Do you get 1,000? No. Do you get 100? No. You get cherry tomatoes. Hmm. You get probably what a person should have. Who needs 1,000? Holy cow. But there's just so many varieties. And, of course, there's orange ones and there's brown ones, chocolate tomatoes. They don't taste like chocolate.
That doesn't sound terribly appetizing.
No, it's just the color.
Well, in just a few minutes here, I think our listeners and I have an idea of some of your favorite varieties for, our area up here. But we'll ask you more about that in a minute.
Sure.
We do have a caller on the line here, though. And, of course, we'd love to hear from many more this hour, still a half hour. If you have a question, a comment, a story, a tip about your outer spaces this hour, we'll try to get you a good answer and we'll get you on the air as well. 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to Della. Della, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Okay, good afternoon.
Hi, Della.
I was calling because I wanted information about reseeding our yard.
Yes.
We have what has cropped up to be some other strange, I guess, varieties of just regular grass. And we would just like for our yard to have more of a uniform look, if you will.
Sure.
And then also there are some spots that seem to just really stay wet. And I don't know of a good way to build up that area so it just doesn't stay wet. So any help that you give in terms of overseeding, maybe thatching, aerating, I know this is not the time of the year to do it right now,
no.
Of course.
Yes.
But just any information along those lines would be really helpful for us so we can plan for spring.
Well, you bet. And, of course, the first thing you have to do is address the fact that water stands there. You've got to fix that before you plant any grass seed. And, of course, that just means you have to bring in some topsoil.
Okay.
Some soil and get it down there to raise that area up and get it leveled off so that it's all the same height, and maybe slope it some direction so that the runoff does go somewhere else other than in the middle. And so it's not much of a slope, very minor.
Well, and if you have that standing water, I mean, not only is it not helpful for the grass, but, you know, there are other pests and whatnot that can stick around there.
It won't
make your yard a whole lot of fun in the summer times.
You'll get mold and everything else, and you don't want any of that stuff. So you have to correct the level of your yard.
Okay, and I think I'm convinced that it's just from the standpoint that we had planted some trees in this spot a while back. And, you know, from moving the dirt around to plant the trees, maybe we took some out or something.
Sure.
And it's right where we have planted these trees. They are just like evergreen trees, like pine trees.
Yeah.
Something like those types of trees.
Sure. Well, that's the main thing. You got to get the soil level straightened out. And then once you do that, then you can plant regular general-purpose type grass seed. It's generally a blend of Kentucky Blue along with some perennial rye or annual rye even, which the rye comes up really fast to help hold the seed in place. And then the Kentucky Blue will come up. And then when winter hits, the annual rye will freeze out and die, but you'll be left with the more wanted Kentucky Blue, which is the idea.
Oh, okay.
It's a process.
Yeah,
Doug. Let me ask you this. You know, because it's never too early to plan. But you know, the weather this winter has been a little bit uneven. You know, sometimes very very warm. Nap right now, very very cold. How early? Let's say the weather warms up a little early this year, as it did last year. How early can Della get out and start working on this?
Well, of course, she can bring the topsoil in anytime there's not lots of snow on the ground. There's not now, but I don't want to be outside right now. It's too cold. But sometime in probably March, she could get the soil level fixed up, maybe hire neighborhood kids to come down, do their best at leveling it out. It's a job that kids do have a problem with, trying to get the soil level. I remember that when I was a child, but or you can have professionals do it for you. And, of course, that's much easier but way more expensive.
So you can get the soil in ASAP, but,
yes.
But in terms of planting, and when she actually wants to get seed out.
Yeah, and if these professionals say they're going to get it leveled and plant the grass seed on the same day, that's fine. The grass seed will set there until the weather is perfect, and then it will grow. It won't hurt it. But if you plant it too early and it's too early for it to grow, it could wash away by the time the weather's perfect. So you have that factor. Ideally, though, if these guys make it level, it shouldn't wash away. Right. But you never know. A good torrential rain could make it go.
And I just have one last question. We still have some leftover seed. Does it have an expiration date? Well, I mean, it has stayed dry in the bag that we paper. I think more like of a paper bag.
Yes, they have expiration dates, but they don't mean much. First of all, an expiration date on any kind of a seed package is mostly against a person like me who sells the seed. I can't sell it after the expiration date.
Okay.
Not even for a penny a pound.
Okay,
that's what the expiration date means. Now, will it still grow? Most likely.
If it's not a decade old, I just looked that up here briefly. It looks like the kind of a general advice is if it's not very, very old.
Like 10 years old, like he said, and okay. if it's not been extremely dried up. But no, it will grow. Grass seed lasts a long time, and the expiration date simply means that your germination rate might be not be as good as it was written on the package. So if it said you have 89% germination rate, well, now maybe you only have 86% or 84%. And so it would be illegal to sell a package of seeds that says 89% when really it's only 84%.
Right. It just loses its effectiveness.
It's still good. And that's what the expiration dates are for.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much. I enjoy the show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Della. And thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay. You're welcome.
All
bye-bye.
Right. Have a good day.
Bye.
260-452-1185 is the local line. If you have a story, a question, a comment, a tip for us during this edition of Midday Matters. Several callers on the line now. We'll get to everybody as they came in. Let's open the phones and go to Carolyn. Carolyn, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, we have had to cut down 3 wonderful ash trees, the best trees in our yard, and one was over our deck. So it looks very bare without the tree, and we have built a pergola to try to fill up the space. Mm-hmm. And I would like a vine to vine up the pergola, and I'm just not quite sure what kind to get. We have honeysuckle in another spot, and I've heard we're not supposed to plant that anymore. Is that right?
Yeah, I would.
Oh, you would? Okay. Yeah. Well, I thought it was one of those invasive plants.
There's a lot of plants that are considered invasive, and I don't know if I agree with all of that.
All right.
The firebush was one in particular, and my friend in Brown County wanted to plant them, and his neighbors said, well, it's invasive. And he goes, but I want it.
Okay.
It's not illegal. And
all
so
right.
He's going to plant it. And so, you know, and I've never seen much invasiveness. I suppose it can be.
I'm looking, I just checked out the Indiana State Government website here. The Japanese honeysuckle looks like is listed as an invasive species here.
So it goes to how invasive is it? Because for example, the firebush, I see them planted over by the eagles, and in all the years it's been there, I haven't seen anything get out of hand. I mean, it just doesn't get out of hand. The question is, maybe the birds carry the seeds off somewhere and it gets out of hand in a wood someplace, but I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, what is another possibility? We have a clematis and it throws seeds all over. I didn't want that.
No. A clematis is perfectly fine. It's not on that list, right, Sean? Clematis is
I don't see it.
It won't be on the list.
Well, just in our own personal yard, I just find it all over the rest of my garden area, so I didn't think I wanted more clematis.
Oh, my. It's just popping up here and there, huh?
Yes. And then wisteria, I've heard, doesn't bloom here, but it could still maybe be a good vine for my...
It's a definite vine, you bet, wisteria. And, you know, you say it doesn't bloom here. Now, I know Indianapolis is supposed to be slightly warmer climate than what we are, although the last 2 winters, I don't think that's been true. They've been colder and snowier than we have. But I've been to Indianapolis, and wisteria was over the trellises and just full of blossoms.
Oh, that would
spring.
Be beautiful.
It was gorgeous.
What other ideas do you have for me?
Well, those are really some of the main ones.
Those
are really good suggestions, Sean.
Of course, you have to evaluate for your own outer spaces there. But the Indiana DNR recommends some alternatives to Japanese honeysuckle, Virgin's Bower, a trumpet honeysuckle, and Woolly Dutchman's Pipe. So
trumpet vine. Trumpet
Virgin's Bower. I'm writing this down. Sure. And then what was the second one?
Trumpet honeysuckle.
Kind of like trumpet
now,
vine.
Now, is that related to the just regular trumpet vine that has the little red
bloom? Right.
I find it I mean, it just is really invasive, I thought.
That's what I mean. You know, it's some of these things that they say are invasive, well, they might be a little invasive. Some of them might be incredibly invasive. Like I've recommended not to plant crown vetch because it's so invasive that some states have it outlawed. I mean,
oh,
you know,
my
it's,
goodness.
So
all
there's
right.
a degree as to how much invasiveness it mm-hmm. might be.
And tell you what, Doug, this is we have a few other folks we need to get to here, but let's put
sure.
this to our listeners. If you have a suggestion for, well, what might look good on
I like the trumpet vine suggestion.
On the pergola here. I'd love to hear some suggestions from our listeners for Carolyn about what she can get growing there. So,
okay, thank you so much.
Carolyn, we appreciate the call.
Okay, goodbye.
All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. Again, we'd love to hear your questions and comments, your stories, all that. But also, if you have any suggestions for something that's not Japanese honeysuckle that Carolyn could grow at on her pergola, we'd love to hear at this hour. I'm sure she would love some suggestions as well. So let's keep going on the phone calls here. Looks like we've got Monty on line 3. Monty, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Monty.
I was needing some help with my orchids. I have them inside, and they're doing quite well. However, mm-hmm. they're very infested with spider mites. And I have ordered stuff and bought products and made my own products, and it appears that I just can't get rid of them.
Oh, yeah, they're tough. They're very tough. Their life cycle's only 28 days, so, you know, you're fighting them, and they're being born every day, literally hundreds of them. And so the battle has to be really fought hard in the beginning, at least for a month. And I would recommend some good soapy water. None of these fancy, expensive, stinky chemicals. Good soapy lemon-scented soap and water. And I think I would start off by spraying these plants about every other day, especially the undersides of the foliage. And you can lay the plant right on its side and shoot it from the underside quite easily that way. But hit those things with the soapy water. And after about a week of every other day, you can go to every 3 or 4 days. But you have to keep this up for a while because these things will just keep hatching. Now, if it were in my greenhouse, it'd be in the garbage in a minute. But
yeah.
that's beside the point because I don't fight spider mites. They're really difficult to fight. It's an ongoing battle. And a lot of times if I would have something like that, it might be on literally hundreds of plants. I just get rid of them. It's quicker and easier. But fight them with lemon-scented soap and water.
Okay.
And there is no true formula. I think we were saying something like 2 tablespoons per quart of water. And
okay.
That would be a nice, strong solution to go after those things. And keep an eye on your orchids at the same time because, like with African violets, some of these, even a mild solution of soapy water on violets is not good. They're very tender. Orchids are somewhat tender, so you have to be a little careful with them too. So keep a close watch on them. If you feel like you've overdone it with the soapy water, then rinse them off with plain water at a time.
Yeah, well, they're all blooming very beautiful right now, but the blooms, the blossoms is where they're really...
They're
really
up there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 All right. Well, thank you very much.
You bet. Now, if he sprays those blossoms with the soapy water or any insecticide, it will discolor the blossoms and damage them. And in some cases, it's almost better to just trim the blossoms, the stems right off, treat the foliage, and wait on the next batch of blooms.
All right.
Get the problem cleaned up and then wait on the next batch, which you might have to wait a long time. That's sad that
sure.
it's up there.
Well, Monty, very good luck to you, and thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. 260-452-1185 is the local line to call if you have a question or a comment or a story or a tip to share with us. Or maybe you have a tip for Carolyn this hour, a good alternative to, say, Japanese honeysuckle for a pergola. Mm-hmm. One more caller on the line, and then we do need to go to a quick break for the news. Let's see. We have Julian on the line. Julian, good afternoon. You're on the program.
Hi, good afternoon. It's Julianne.
Oh, Julianne, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Yes, I am just planning for the spring. Very excited.
Oh,
can't
yeah.
Can't wait for it to be here. Yeah. I am looking to, I tried planting blueberries and they didn't do a thing. And I had heard that potentially my soil may not have a good level of acid.
Right.
Either low or not low or too low or too high. So
it's
I really would
low.
Love to plant some. And I've also heard that they do better in a large quantity of bushes. Is that true?
Well, I think that they probably would do better with a cluster of plants. You don't have to go any larger than four, but 4 to 8 plants makes a good size cluster of blueberries. And in order to improve your soil, you just need to add some peat moss, preferably the heavy, wet, Michigan-type peat moss, which is the cheaper type. The other one is Canadian peat. That's the light brown, fluffy type. I would not necessarily add that. I'd add the heavy, inexpensive Michigan peat. And then you can use acid-loving fertilizer. You know, Miracle-Gro's version of it is called Mir Acid. The Mir stands for Miracle-Gro, M-I-R. People think that's a product name, Mir Acid, like Kleenex, you know. It's actually just their abbreviation. It's acid fertilizer, and because it's Miracle-Gro, they call it Mir Acid.
Okay.
But there's other
really
acid.
Really quick, when you talk about acids,
yeah.
With being I'm an organic grower,
uh-huh.
Then are there products available through the organic line that with the acid in them as well?
Well, of course, the peat moss. That is a natural acid type, not fertilizer, but an acid type substance, which would really help your plants the most. But see, sometimes that's just not enough. You need a booster. And
uh-huh.
that's where these fertilizers come in. I can understand. So I'm thinking about that. I'll tell you, I'm going to have to look on the shelf and see which one of those, you know, there's like lime and bone meal and things like that. And lime and bone meal are not acid producers.
Okay.
It would be another product, and it might be, and don't get me wrong if I'm wrong about this, but it might be something like, not blood meal, but another type of meal. I forget what it is. Right.
Okay.
My mind's not in spring right now, so sometimes
it's still in winter mode.
Very
yeah.
helpful with the peat moss. Then do I mix it when I'm preparing to plant the bush down in with the soil itself, or does that go
well,
above?
It's great if you can get it in the ground, but if your plants are already planted and you don't want to dig them up. Then you can put it around on the top and just sort of work it in with a spading fork.
Okay.
See, everyone knows what a shovel is and a pitchfork, but a spading fork is a stiff, probed fork that you use like a shovel, but it's shaped like a pitchfork.
I have one.
Yes, it's a very handy tool
yes,
for turning soil over and breaking it apart. Right.
Yes.
So that
absolutely.
That's what you would use.
Okay.
And yeah, I'll have to think about any other product that you could sprinkle on there that would be more organic. You bet.
Okay. Uh-huh. But that's very helpful, and I can do some of my own research now with that information.
Good.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Julianne, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 260-452-1185. If you have a question, a comment, a story, perhaps a suggestion on one of our earlier callers who's looking for a vine to grow on a pergola, we'd love to hear you. Just in the last 10 minutes of the program here. And Doug, I think we'll forego our news break.
Right.
We have a caller who's left a message with us. We also have another caller on the line here. So I do want to get to this message. It's been with us for a while. The caller caller wants to know if it is safe to put the shavings of a dead ash tree, which died from the borer disease, around her garden or to use as firewood in the house. She was concerned about the potential for little bugs coming out. And we've heard from the DNR and many others before that it can be bad news to transport firewood that hasn't been treated from ash trees. What's your take?
I would throw it out.
Throw it out.
Yeah. I mean, I would just throw it out and not take the chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the borers have been so nasty in our listening area.
Bad.
You don't want to take a chance
Why play with fire?
Keeping them in your yard and around more trees, things like that.
So with the ash, I'd throw it out. With, of course, walnut shavings and ashes and chips, I'd throw them out.
All right. Well, we appreciate the message here. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Lyle on line one. Lyle, a very good afternoon to you. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. I wanted to comment on the vine on a pergola.
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. We had two of the standard trumpet vines, one on a pergola and one on a fence row, and we are now in our fourth year coming up of trying to eradicate the vines because they spread from the root system badly. And we have a lot of perennials. And so the vines, the root system is actually growing underneath all of these perennials.
And popping up through the perennials, huh?
And they're popping up through the perennials, and the one was located by the rock garden, and so it's coming up. And without destroying both of those things, we've tried Roundup and 2,4-D and lots of other things, painting them on the leaves or, protecting the surrounding vegetation and doing a direct spray on the plants, and nothing has totally worked, but we are slowly weeding it down to where we're getting less and less shoots coming up. So I think we're finally reducing the strength of the root system. But when you've got things growing up 15, 20 feet from where the original plant was.
Oh, yeah. That's invasive.
it sounds like the moral of your story here, Lyle, is that you would not recommend the trumpet vines.
Not unless you want to plant them in a large container.
Yeah, that's it. You'd have to go to containerize then in that case.
And then it
could still come out the drainage holes, and off it goes once it gets going.
Well,
so it's a very good...
You'd have to keep the container up off the ground.
Yeah. It's a very good word of caution. And this is what we're looking for. This we appreciate because, we don't want to give people bad advice.
Bye.
Yeah.
Lyle, before we let you go, are you considering any alternatives for your for the pergola? Or are you just going to work to keep the trumpet vines back a little bit?
Actually, what we did was we planted a seedless Concord grape.
Oh, yeah.
For the pergola, and are letting it grow up over the top.
Great suggestion. Grapes.
Yeah. And the seedless ones, are pretty handy, and we have grandchildren, so it becomes a favorite spot.
Oh, well, that's cool. That's great advice.
That's a great idea, yeah.
The seedless grape. I didn't think of that.
Lyle, we appreciate the call and the word of warning there, too.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, that's
Thank
it. That's what
you.
We
Thank
needed.
All
Thanks.
Right. Have a great day, Lyle. Thank you so much. Looks like we have just a couple more callers on the line here, just about 4 minutes left in the program. We'll try to get to everybody here. Let's go to Darlene. Darlene, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to make a comment on the wisteria.
Yeah,
sure.
We've been growing one. We've had it about 10 years, and it's just beautiful. It blooms beautiful here.
Great.
I've never heard that they don't bloom here because ours is just beautiful when it does bloom.
Yes.
It took about 5 years after we planted it, but once it started blooming, it does very well here.
And it blooms now for you every year?
Yes, yes, every year, every spring. Last spring it bloomed early because it was so warm out.
Oh yeah, it was early. Yeah, and I think that's great. See, that tells the tale right here. Is the other gal? I don't think she's had hers for 5 years, so that could be what's going on here. She just needs to wait another year or two and probably will get it into bloom.
Yeah, I also heard that it could take up to 7 years for them to bloom, but it didn't take quite that long ours.
And I agree that there are probably different varieties and some bloom better than others.
Yeah, well, they're very worth planting, even worth waiting the 5 or 7 years it takes, because once they start blooming, they are just gorgeous.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they smell good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Darlene, we appreciate the suggestion here. We're getting lots of good advice this hour. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Just a few moments left in the program here. We'll have time to get to Kathy in just a moment. We did get an email here from Anne. Anne wants to, it sounds like, echo what we just heard from Darlene. Anne says, regarding the caller who wanted suggestions for her pergola, I have a wisteria at my lake cottage, which is about an hour north of here. It blooms nicely. And we appreciate the advice. Several votes now for wisteria as well. Let's get to the phones. We have time for one more caller. And it's not Kathy. I don't have the name. Caller, can we have your name, please?
I'm Jennifer.
Oh, Jennifer.
I really was just going to put in another vote for wisteria. My neighbors have a lovely one that's quite established, and it really does bloom like crazy.
That's
lovely.
Good.
And the caller sounded like she really would have liked a wisteria should she thought that it would bloom, but I think it will.
Well, there you go. I think we should have been able to talk her into it now, I think, because we've talked her out of a lot of other things. So far, the vote has either been wisteria or grapes, which was a good idea, too.
Sure, yeah. Well, Jennifer, we appreciate the vote of confidence in wisteria this hour. Looks like wisteria is the winner.
Yep. Thank you.
They really want to come in my bathroom window from the neighbors. They go like crazy, too. I don't know that they're invasive necessarily, but they want in my house.
They're very enthusiastic, perhaps.
They're quite enthusiastic. Thank you.
Jennifer, all the best. Thank you very much for the call.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Doug, we just have, about another minute or so left in the program here. Wisteria, a wonderful
Definitely
suggestion.
A winner,
lots of
yeah.
folks excited about wisteria. And grapes as well, something that a lot of folks may not necessarily think about. They don't think about this being wine country necessarily.
But if you're doing it on a trellis or on an overhang thing like that, grapes, it doesn't even matter if they produce grapes or not. You just want it for the foliage, the vines. They're easy to maintain. You can go out there and cut them back generally while they're dormant. So any nice warm day in February or March, you can go out there and do some trimming on your grapevines. That's usually when you do it, is while they're dormant.
Hmm.
And, you know, when it gets nice out, if it hits 48, you think, man, I wish there was something to do outside right now. Go out and prune your grapevines.
All right. Well, yeah. Carolyn, we hope you got some good suggestions today. Maybe you're starting to lean in a certain direction. We'd love to hear from you when you make your decision about what to use on the pergola. So thanks so much for your call. Thanks very much to everybody who called and lent a hand and had a question and a comment and a story this hour. We do appreciate you each and every week. Doug Hackbar, thank you very much for being with us once again.
Thank you.
I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1, and of course streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh Air with Terry Gross and your local host Katie Anderson is coming up next. Thanks for listening.